Coming up on March's episode of the Canada Connection, Andrew and Ashley talk about what's been happening in Lansing. You know, we talk about our issues on tobacco prevention funding, our BCCC MP funding, along with oral chemo. We also touch on an issue that could potentially allow tobacco to be delivered right to your front door. So we talk about those issues and more and hear what's happening in Lansing. Ashley spends a little time talking about what's happening in D.C. And actually, we might see an increase in research funding for cancer research. So we're going to dive into that a little bit. On our Carmanos McLaren moment this month, we welcome Dr. Mohammed Najid Al-Halak, and we talk about colorectal cancer. Yes, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and so we spent some time talking about prevention efforts, screening efforts that are available for folks, and are colonoscopies really that scary? So we chat about that a little bit. We also welcome this month to our show Representative Samantha Steckloff. She is a new and upcoming representative here in Lansing, but her journey actually starts when she hears the word breast cancer for the first time at such a young age. And so we're super excited to have her on the show this month. And so we hear a little bit more about her, her plans and her goals, and why she decided to run for office. So I am Andrew Sheppers, along with my co-host, Ashley Hall. This is the Candid Connection, brought to you by Carmanos Cancer Institute and McLaren Healthcare, the largest provider of cancer care and research in the state. Hello, everyone, and welcome. It's March.
Yay!
Better March, can you believe it?
It's warm finally, so I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I know. When we, you know, as we're putting this podcast together today, it's actually 60 degrees outside right now. I almost took the show outside, but I thought that that would be kind of weird. But welcome, everyone. We appreciate you joining us today for March's episode. It is March Madness. So go ahead and hopefully you got your brackets filled out before we get into the tournament. St. Patrick's Day is also this month, so there's a lot of tomfoolery that goes around with that. But most importantly, it is Colorectal Cancer Screening and Awareness Month, and so, you know, you need to focus on your colon this month, especially if you are 45 or older. And so, you know, we're excited. Later in the show, we're going to have Dr. Al-Halak from our Al-Halak. Thank you. We're going to have Dr. Al-Halak from Carmanos Cancer Institute joining us in our Carmanos McLaren moment to talk about you know, what you need to do as you get into March, and when we talk about colorectal cancer and screening and everything from there. So a lot of good information coming up. So make sure you stick around for that. But also, we've got a great interview this month, don't we?
We do. Absolutely.
I'm so excited. We've got Representative Samantha Steckloff, who's going to be joining us. She's a new rep here in Michigan, but she's got an amazing story and essentially how cancer has impacted her life and how it's kind of led her to where she is today. So a lot of great stuff coming up, but why don't we kind of get into in terms of what's happening here with some of our state updates so first and foremost, you know, oral chemo fairness, House Bill 4354 has been an issue that, you know, we've been working on here for quite some time. And I can tell you the wheels are still continuing to turn, but it's one of those situations right now. It's like with the duck on the pond, it's moving, but you don't really see a lot of action because a lot of the stuff is happening underneath the water right now. And so I've been spending a lot of time working with the chairman of the Senate Health Policy Committee and others in Senate and House leadership to really find that path forward. So, but boy, hopeful here as we get close to spring break for the legislature, we're going to have some type of plan, right, Ashley?
I sure hope so. It'd be great to see this passed after all of the work that our volunteers have put in over the past decade or more on oral chemo. This is really meaningful access to care legislation that I know we can get it passed this year, Andrew.
Yes. No, I know. I mean, fingers crossed, right? Like, this is something we definitely have been working on and would love to see this. And so, you know, if you want more information about that, make sure you head to fightcancer.org/fairness. That's a site that we continue to put information up on and resources. So go ahead, check that out. A lot of good stuff there. Fightcancer.org/fairness. So our next issue that we've really been working on and talking about is money. It's budget season here in Michigan, right? And so, you know, we've got two big issues that we're working on right now in the state budget. And the first one really focuses in on screening, right, Ashley?
Yes.
Yeah, so we're focusing in on our BCCC program, or for those that don't know that acronym, that's the Breast and Cervical Cancer Control, and then there's an N in Michigan, Navigation Program. And essentially what that does is it helps our underserved communities, whether it's rural or urban, whether it's, Black, white, Latino, Latinx, all those different groups are coming together. And we're here to, you know, essentially get them screened. And making sure that we're catching those breast and cervical cancers early so we can go ahead and essentially navigate them through the treatment path that they need to take. And then their cancer care afterwards, knowing that, you know, if you've experienced cancer once, your trip to the doctor after you're in remission is totally different than it was, you know, before you started your journey. So, you know, really focusing on that, we're asking for $2.8 million. And this program is really intended to reach those places we haven't been before, right?
Yeah. And, you know, screening is so important. Like, the main way to put a stop to cancer is by catching it early. So these programs really make a huge impact in those underserved communities.
Yeah, absolutely right. So that's coming up. We're working on that. But we've also got some work around tobacco. And, you know, we've really we found out some interesting data here in the past a little bit, haven't we, Ashley, in terms of kind of where Michigan lines up with their tobacco use?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, recently the CDC just released a report, I actually think last week, with some unfortunate, disturbing news. You know, e-cigarettes remain the most popular tobacco use product in history. Right now, more than 2.5 million middle schoolers and high schoolers are reporting current tobacco use, most of that being through e-cigarettes. And, you know, 23% of Michigan high schoolers use tobacco products.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we've got a need where we need to do some outreach and maybe do some more education to our youth to understand just, you know, how bad these products are, right? And how it leads to lifelong addiction. And so, so that's part of our second ask, right? And our second funding ask this year is to make a $10 million investment in our tobacco prevention efforts here in Michigan. And so, knowing that the state has not really made a major investment in tobacco prevention work since the passage of Prop A, and so, which was back 2001, maybe 2099. So, I mean, we're talking over 20 years of no real solid investment in terms of trying to prevent our youth from starting to use and providing resources for adults to walk away. And so, you're really excited. And we've worked with the Department of Health and Human Services here in Michigan to really put a plan together and how that funding would be effectively used. And so, you know, it's something that we're going to continue to work on as we go. And if you're going to be at our Cancer Action Day, which is coming up next month.
Yes, it is. Thursday, April 28th.
April 28th. You know, we're going to be talking about this with lawmakers. So, really hope you can join us there and whatnot. And of course, if you're looking for information on what's going on here in Michigan, you know, head to fightcancer.org/MI to find out more info in terms of what's happening here in Michigan, but also what's happening on the federal level. And so, I know there's been a lot of world issues that have really kind of taken up some of the air in terms of what's happening on the federal level. But if I remember right, we had a continuing resolution pass, and I think we may have seen a little bit of a bump in research funding.
Your suspicions are correct.
Okay.
The House did pass a research funding increase in their most recent continuing resolution. But of course, as with anything with the federal government, there's some good news and bad news in that. So the good news is that the House included a $2.25 billion increase for the National Institutes of Health.
That's awesome.
Which is huge, right? They do a lot of that really important work, and specifically a $353 million increase for the National Cancer Institute.
Woohoo! All right.
And one thing that's really cool is $1 billion for a new advanced research project agency.
Nice.
That's dedicated to accelerating the pace of biomedical research for rare cancer, for rare diseases like cancer. You know, we want the money. We need the research funding. All of that is wonderful. Unfortunately, they did miss the mark on cancer prevention funding and access to healthcare in the continuing resolution. But those research funds are going to go a long way.
Yeah, that's great. So now this $1 billion you talked about for this agency, is this the ARPA-H program that we've kind of talked about on the show before?
You know it is.
All right. Well, it's great to see that off the ground. And doesn't that kind of connect into that cancer moonshot that we talked about last show?
It absolutely does. Yep. So this ARPA-H program is definitely going to accelerate that cancer moonshot that President Biden is working on.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like great stuff and exciting stuff. And hopefully we can start to see some of that come to fruition here over the next few months and really energize those efforts there. So, well, talking about energizing efforts, right? It's March is colorectal cancer month. And so energizing your efforts to go in and get screened is vital. And so we all know that colorectal cancer, if caught early, is one of the more treatable forms of cancer. And so, you know, we're really excited this month to welcome our guest from Karmanos in our Karmanos McLaren moment, Dr. El Halak, who is a medical oncologist with Karmanos. And you know, he's going to spend some time today talking with us here about, you know, things that patients need to keep in mind. When do they need to get screened? You know, how often should they get screened, and have a better understanding about why screening is important. So join us here as we get into our Karmanos McLaren moment. Well, Ashley, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and that means it's time to go in and it's time to get those checkups, isn't it?
Yes, you know, colorectal cancer screening is super important, and that's why we're talking about it today with one of the experts.
That's right. You know, and there are a lot of questions around this, especially like, you know, when you should be getting your screening, what types of screening there are, and whatnot. So we're really excited to welcome our guest today, Dr. Mohammed Najib El Halak, who is part of the gastrointestinal and neuroendocrine oncology unit at Karmanos. Dr. El Halak, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, like we said, March is colorectal cancer month. And so, you know, we want to make sure that folks are getting tested and getting screenings. You know, what tests are really available for people out there so that they can kind of get on top of this?
Yes. Several tests available for not patients, but those are, you know, normal population at average risk for colon cancer. And this is the majority of the population will be at average risk for colon cancer. We say there's two types of categories for those testing, visual and non-visual. The non-visual, which is an indirect way to look for colon cancer by testing the stool sample for a hidden blood sample inside it that you really don't see it, but maybe it's there. And that could be as simple, like it's just a blood check, or it could be more than this, looking for the DNA of the cancer inside those tools. So those are non-visual testing, non-invasive testing. Of course, nothing is 100% unless you go inside, really, close to 100% if you go inside with a colonoscopy, which is the gold standard testing. And that's, we call it a visual testing to look inside for polyps, you know, for early signs of cancer. And also there's another way, we call it also visual, using a CT scan, a special CT scan that will actually give you a 3D picture of the colon from inside. And if there's a polyp, you can see it there. And if there's a polyp, then you will have to go with a colonoscopy, of course, to remove it and test it out if there's any early signs of cancer in it.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, you mentioned colonoscopy, right? And I think when people think colorectal cancer screening or colon screening, they think about that colonoscopy. And I think that, you know, some may, you know, maybe hear horror stories from other people that maybe went through it or maybe kind of hesitant to go ahead. You know, is there a chance you could kind of, you know, walk us through that test? And then, you know, really, is that something people should really fear at the end of the day?
No, I really don't think so, honestly. It's a very, really simple, quick in and out testing, outpatient, no need for being in a hospital at all, actually. Okay. You can do it in several locations. We do it here at Hermanos in downtown location, and also in the Weisberg Clinic location that's in the suburb area as well. So more convenient, easy access in and out. It is, I think, what people really think about colonoscopy in two aspects. One is the preparation for colonoscopy, which is basically trying to clear your colon from any residual food or stools that you ate in the last several days before colonoscopy. That's important for us when we go inside the colon. We can see clear image. We don't miss any of those polyps hiding between any stools or any food particles. So if you go inside and it's clean, shiny, you can really see everything inside. You can detect those polyps. And especially special attention to those flat polyps that can be easily missed, actually, if there is anything that's covering them. And those could be the precursors for a colon cancer in the future. So the preparation, I think, is what people fear usually. And it's really, honestly, it's simple. It's just that day before the colonoscopy that they give you Miralax or something else like to drink to try to basically have several bowel movements before until you have a clear bowel movement. And then they tell you to take only clean liquid diet the last day or two. And of course, this is very individualized depending on the person doing the colonoscopy. If they really have like a severe constipation, that might take longer, like 2 days. If they really don't have constipation, it may take just 1 day to do it. So that's okay. The first part, the preparation. The second part is, of course, the actual colonoscopy, where they basically come to the center, to Hermanos, for example, and they give them, the anesthesiologist will be there. We'll put them to sleep, so of course they don't feel anything. They don't remember anything, in fact. And then the gastroenterologist will basically use the camera to go inside and look inside really carefully. It takes about probably between 20 to 40 minutes, depending on like what they see inside. If they have to do any removal of the polyps, so that you're just only going and it's really completely clean, no polyps at all to remove, and then it'll be a shorter. And then after that, they will just wake up from their sedation and they'll see their family member. They'll see the doctor to explain to them the procedure, and then they go home, really. So it's really not something, honestly, anybody should fear.
Yeah. Well, one, it sounds like for me, who's a bigger guy, maybe a good way to maybe drop a couple pounds from having to go through the prep work. But two, it also sounds like there's something super easy that may just kind of give you that day off from work, too, that you might be looking for. But more importantly, save your life. So very, very, very cool with that. I know age has been real, you know, a question, and Ashley and I have really been talking about this. You had a question about age, didn't you, Ashley?
Yeah. So, you know, I just recently entered my early 30s. So, you know, at what age should I be thinking about getting, you know, screening for colorectal cancer?
Okay. That's really a very good question. That has changed recently, actually, thanks to the work from the American Cancer Association and the U.S. Preventive Service on looking at the statistics. So, the age to start colonoscopy or to start the screening really used to be 50. And that came from an old statistic before the year 2000 that showed that most of the cases of colon cancer It's happening after age 55, between 55 to 75, 80. That's the peak, like two-thirds of the cases, and of course, the highest mortality in this population. But then after 2000, and of course, thanks to all the colonoscopy and the screening methods that we're doing, the mortality started to decline in this population, and for colon cancer specific. But then we noticed that there is an increase in incidence in this younger population that's below 55. And it's actually per statistics, like a 50% increase in the incidence of colon cancer in this population, younger than 55, between 40 to 55, and an increase in mortality rate in this population, about 11% increase from colon cancer. And that's what brought the attention of the American Cancer Society in 2018. They updated their guidelines and they said, okay, giving this data, we really should start for average risk patients. Average risk patients are all of us, okay? All of us, most of us, unless you have a family member, a close family member, first degree with a colon cancer, that you're not, you are at high risk for colon cancer. You start earlier than this event. This is not also for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. Those are a high risk population that you start earlier. Or if you carry a gene that can give you the colon cancer, those are not averages. Those are high risk patients. They start earlier, as early sometimes as 12 years old, actually, if they have a specific gene that can give this syndrome where there's like thousands of polyps in their colon and they can develop into cancer any minute during the early life of those populations. So the new age to start colonoscopy or screening for colon cancer now is 45. It's 45 based on those, as I told you, the data and the incident and the mortality increase in this population.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, you know, it's funny, you had touched on a little bit. Another conversation Ashley and I were having about is that, you know, you touched on a little bit talking about some factors, but I don't know, Ashley, you know, I think it's a great time to kind of ask that your question about factors, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of answered it. you know, outside of, you know, someone in your family or having the gene or the inflammatory bowel disease, is there any other factors that folks should be looking for to get those tests earlier? And I know you mentioned as early as 12, you know, so at what age should we be looking for those different factors as well?
So, of course, I mean, if you know a family member, you would hear about them if they share their history. And then, of course, if they have it, if it's a first degree relative, you really should test your genes for those genes that can predispose patients to colon cancer early in their life, like something called APC gene that give the familial adenomatosis polyposis, that the hundred thousands of polyps in your colon. That's the one actually that we see in the kids, that it happens in age 12 to 15, you know, and beyond that, but it really comes earlier in the life. You know, I see patients in 20s already with a colon cancer, unfortunately. And then we have the other syndrome that's also genetic syndrome called Lynch syndrome that, you know, predispose patients to colon cancer throughout their life. But it is, it starts about like age of late 20s, early 30s. Again, you're going to hear those stories from family members who had colon cancer or other cancers. Sometimes like they had a, or for example, uterine cancer, or they have gastric cancer, stomach cancer, or liver cancer. So it's not just only colon cancer history. It's important to know really your family history. Of course, if they share with you what type of cancer I have in the family running. And you know, at any time, if you have any questions, of course, we do have here a great at Kumanos. We have a genetic counselor here that you can get your phone call, answer your questions, even have like a phone visit with you to answer those questions and see if you really need to be tested before the regular age, which is 45 for average risk patients. Now, other risk factors, of course, for colon cancer, as we're touching on that, of course, overweight, being overweight, not exercising regularly. Of course, tobacco is the big deal. Regardless of what type of tobacco, you know, use, smoking or chewing, will increase the risk of colon cancer, definitely. Excessive alcohol use, it's been really linked strongly to colon cancer as well. Low fiber diet, so not healthy diet, is really a big component of that, big component. We see it a lot, actually, especially when like after we see the colon cancer, and now you start talking to patients what was their, you know, diet throughout their life, and then you realize that this has like been building up, really building up over years. Not one risk factor really, other than the genetic. Okay, genetic by itself can do it. Other than genetic, it's not just like one risk factor can do it. It's really a combination of risk factors. Environment, of course, there's a lot of toxins in the environment that we live and eat and smell. All of those, of course, can do that. We cannot really pinpoint on one specific thing that we say, oh, definitely, like for example, the asbestos and the story of mesothelioma, that definitively was connected to the mesothelioma. In colon cancer, really, we really don't have that strong connection to say that if you get exposed to this, you're going to have colon cancer. Because those are hard to connect, needs very controlled environment to do that type of testing and trial.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like a ton of great information in terms of, you know, risk factors and screening times and whatnot. You know, if folks are looking to get more information or really, you know, looking to start, you know, planning those screenings, you know, where can they go at Karmanos to get more information?
Yes, great question. They can either call 1-800-KARMANOS to start. That's like an easy start. And then they can direct them what's the right phone number or what's the right person to talk to schedule what the visit they would like to have. If it's like for screening, for example, they can easily make it happen for them, as I said, in one of two locations. Or if it's about colon cancer, either personal or family history, or as I said, you know, a relative that, you know, a loved one that you would like to have, for example, a second opinion about the colon cancer management, you know, they start with 1-800-KARMANOS. The karmanos.org, actually, website has a great tons of information about colon cancer, screening, of course, how to make appointments and how to get the help you need, actually. And again, I stress on the fact that the genetic counselors that we have, they're great people. They can really help you with simple questions that you really, you know, don't know where to go to answer those questions. And maybe your primary care needs help regarding those questions. They're really a complicated discussions about the family history and what to do with those things. And I think it's a great asset.
Awesome. Well, you know, thank you so much. And thank you for sharing all that information. Again, that's 1-800-KARMANOS or karmanos.org/colorectal screening. And of course, we'll have all that information here in the show notes for everyone. So, well, Dr. Ahlak, thank you so much for joining us today and taking a few moments out of what I'm sure is a busy Friday for you. Hopefully we have some of that warm weather that we had yesterday today.
Yes, we need that. Really. Thank you, Andrew, for having me. And thank you, Ash, for also having me and joining the show.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that was Dr. Mohammed Najid Al-Halak from the from Karmanos Cancer Institute joining us, giving us some great information on colorectal screenings and things that you need to know. But coming up now here, we're going to go ahead and take a short break. But coming up after the break, we're going to be having Representative Samantha Steckloff, who has a wonderful cancer story journey in terms of how that got her into politics. So stay with us. This is the Canada Connection.
At Karmanos, we specialize in providing cancer care that you can't get anywhere else. Because we're home to one of the largest clinical trials programs in the country, only Karmanos can give you access to more than 250 of the most innovative and promising cancer treatments available. And with locations across Michigan and virtual visits, we offer easy and safe access to the expertise and guidance of your cancer team. We do all of this for one reason, to give you your best chance.
Welcome back. So we're really excited for our next guest today, who is turning out to be one of the real big advocates for the American Cancer Society, working on cancer issues here in Michigan, but really has just an amazing story to share in terms of how she got from essentially a cancer diagnosis to a legislative leader here in Michigan. And so we're really excited today to welcome Representative Samantha Steckloff. Representative, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking some time out on what is a busy weekend as we're recording on the first weekend of March Madness.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be here. I'm so happy to be here. I'm missing my Boilermakers kickoff.
Tip off. It's tip off. So,
see, as a cancer survivor, we can always blame chemo brain.
Fact. that is a fact.
So, the silver lining.
The silver lining.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time. And Ashley and I were just kind of talking about your story a little bit earlier and just kind of how you got started. And you had a question about how she got involved, right?
Ashley? Yeah. Well, you know, Rep Sekloff, it might sound weird, but I'm a big fan of yours. As a young woman who's been involved with politics for a long time, you know, I think your story is just really inspiring. So, you know, how did you get involved with politics and decide to run for public office?
You know, it kind of goes back a long time. I got involved at a very young age, actually in local government. The city received a grant in 1994. I mean, we're going back really far to create after school programs. So I became involved, and the whole point was getting young people to create programs for their own age demographic. So that's really how I got started, moving forward in the program, creating mayor's youth councils. I went to university and studied foreign policy with my emphasis in crimes against humanity. So I was originally wanting to go into the foreign service and work in embassies. You know, life happens, getting ready to go to grad school, senior year, long story. I was a little young for the program, so they wanted me to hold out. So I took a fellowship and came back to the state of Michigan, working at University of Michigan at the time. And in 2012, during lame duck session, when we had just voted to not have an emergency financial manager, and the state legislature moved towards that, as well as doing a right to work. So I felt like my vote didn't matter anymore, and it was time for me to get involved. I don't think I necessarily ever saw myself in elected office, but I always saw myself working behind the scenes. So I pulled petitions, ran for city council in Farmington Hills, won in 2013, and I was at the time the youngest serving elected official within the community of Farmington Hills and Farmington. So in 2015, I was diagnosed with breast cancer at just 31 years old. And it's really difficult to receive a cancer diagnosis, especially at that age, because you feel invincible. I mean, you're at the height of your career. You're involved. I was single. I just bought my own house. I thought I was in the best health of my life. And then when that diagnosis happens, you know, you go from feeling invincible to feeling completely alone and helpless. So one of the best things I did was join Gilda's Club of Metro Detroit. And I was part of a young survivors group, a young adult support group that really helped me deal with my diagnosis. But going through the learning process, learning more about breast cancer and how rare it is at this age, I started looking more into health diagnoses and how they affect your local area. And I realized so much information that was lacking within communities. For example, I created a Commission on Community Health, the first of its kind in the state of Michigan, that was between the cities of Farmington and Farmington Hills. And we really took a deep dive into health issues. So now we're being able to run healthcare screenings at all the schools. We're working on diabetic programs, especially for young people. So really learning how to get health information out there. The diagnosis affected me really, really hard. You know, when you're by yourself, you're living by yourself, all of a sudden, you know, you need all this support and help. And thank God my family all lives in this area and they were able to help me through it. You know, you never know what's going to happen and you always go to the worst. And at one point I thought I was going to have to quit my job, sell my house, move in with my parents. But I was able to avoid all of that with a really strong attitude that helped propel me through chemotherapy. And I was going through chemo for well over a year, and it was really difficult to work full time. And I learned about how difficult managing an illness like this is in the world. Short-term disability was never an option for me, only long-term disability. In order to receive long-term disability, you have to be out of work without pay for a certain amount of days. And obviously that was never going to be an option. So I tried to work. But you know, as you're getting chemotherapy, that's a full day thing. The next day you have to go in for shots. And then you never know how you're going to feel. So you're missing a lot of work. And that's when I decided it was time for me to work from the top down. And it was time for me to create legislation to help cancer diagnoses through this most difficult time of their life. So it wasn't necessarily about preventative care, but it was also about how do you take that preventative care? And if God forbid you're diagnosed, how do you manage through that system? Yeah. And so running for state office became my top priority in 2015. And that is why when I ran in 2020, so much of my commitment and my issues are centered around cancer diagnosis and screenings.
Yeah, which is just, you know, listening to you speak, like I'm 31. So just thinking about your diagnosis at 31, like what would that do to my life right now? And how much it's inspired you to, you know, run for state office. And I know you talked a little bit about the preventative care pieces and, you know, how to help cancer patients financially. But was there anything else about your cancer journey that, you know, was a main impetus to get you to run for office?
When I found my lump, the only reason I found my lump is because I got sunburned over Memorial Day weekend. I was wearing a bikini. Yeah, I was wearing a bikini back, you know, at 31 years old, like I said, best shape of my life. And I was putting lotion. It was along my bikini line that I felt this lump. And I'm going to be honest with you. The only reason I got it checked is because I just happened to have a gynecology appointment on Tuesday. And I was there, I was going through the motions. And as my doctor was leaving, I said, oh, I forgot to tell you, I found a lump. And they're like, well, that's kind of the most important thing for you to tell me. So I checked it out. And, you know, even they were like, you're so young, you know, 99%, it's not going to be something, but I have to send you. And my doctor saved my life because learning through this young adult support group, so many people had to fight for healthcare. So many people had to fight to get a mammogram. So I had a mammogram scheduled for Thursday, just 2 days after. And like I said, I thought it was nothing. I felt invincible. I thought it was maybe from working out. And they did the mammogram. The lump wouldn't show because at that age, you just have such dense breast tissue. And we did a biopsy. We tagged it. And that's how we found it. And I didn't know at the time, but they knew as soon as they biopsied it that it was cancer. And I was wondering where my mother was during this time. And unfortunately, she was in the radiologist's office, you know, crying, and because they know. And when I got that call on Tuesday, my whole life changed. And I was lucky because my doctor sent me to get a mammogram. And what I realized is, as a young person under the age of 40, you don't automatically get the chance to get a mammogram. You have to really fight with your doctor and your insurance company to get it covered. So one of the bills that I have been working on is allowing mammograms at a younger age. I want it down to 30 because we have now this amazing 3D technology that is becoming so prevalent in hospital systems across the state. So I'm trying to lower the age because when you're not doing those checkups, you would never know. And as we've seen going, you know, in the past few years, breast cancer has continued to rise in young women. So I'm really trying to work on screening programs. On top of that, I have a bill for as well as women's health, because after the age of 60, insurance won't cover a pap smear. And 20% of all cervical are in the age of 60 and over. This is a fight. I can't believe how hard I am fighting to get a hearing on this bill. Unfortunately, insurance doesn't meet. I am not in the party of control. So I'm working really, really hard because this is a life-saving bill. And something that important, you just can't sit idly by. So I am continuing to work. Hopefully can get it into another committee and we can get going. But there's a lot of cancer screenings, bills that are in there that aren't being taken up. And we really have to work on that. The other thing that I really learned about was oral chemotherapy, because one of the chemo drugs I was on is actually offered in a pill form. Mm-hmm. So think about all those days of work I wouldn't have had to miss if I could just take a pill every single day. And so that has been the next fight. And I almost get goosebumps thinking about it, because, you know, you get diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age and you're constantly asking, why me? I'm doing the best I can. And it never really hit me until I got into the state legislature, where I was like, okay, maybe this is why, because I truly believe in turning adversity into advocacy. So by just telling your story, you can make such a difference. So I was able to testify on oral chemotherapy and just tell my story and how difficult it is, because young adults are such it's often forgotten about. I remember leaving that hearing and two gentlemen on the other side of the aisle came up to me and they said, because of you, I changed my vote. And that's why I'm here. We got it passed out of the House. We're waiting for a hearing in the Senate, but that's why it happened to me. I truly believe in, you know, whatever you believe in, a higher power or not, sometimes it's just nice to be reassured. And mm-hmm. I'm using that gift to my greatest strength, because I will tell you, this cancer diagnosis, I didn't know at the time, but has become a true blessing, because I'm able to save so many lives.
Yeah. Well, and I think you bring up a great point, right? There are a lot of cancer issues that are out there and policies that are out there, but, you know, like oral chemo, for example, it's been a 16-year fight. And so, you know, now that you've had the opportunity to kind of be in the whole web of Lansing-ness, right? What do you feel, you know, one, how do those issues, how do cancer issues kind of stack up amongst all the other issues, right? And then why is it, or why do you feel they just don't get the attention we feel like they should get?
I'm kind of shocked about the lack of attention, especially going through a pandemic. Mm-hmm. You would think through a pandemic, healthcare would be the top priority, but it's often so forgotten about. I cannot believe that I have to fight for just lowering the age of mammograms when we finally have the technology to do it. Yes, there's so many things, so many issues at the state level, but it's not like you can't chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's the outside pressure from insurance companies. I don't want to get too much in trouble right now, but you know, when you only have 6 years with term limits, all the power goes to lobbyists. So that's a whole nother thing we could talk about term limits, but you know, they have all the control, and it's really difficult to get these things through. My goal is by the end of my 6 years, I got 5 years left, we're going to get oral chemotherapy passed, and I'm going to get cancer screenings finally passed for everyone. Those are my top two priorities, and I cannot leave without those being done, without them being accomplished.
Well, we appreciate that, you know, especially having to deal with the oral chemo fight as long as we have been. It just seems to continue to slug on and on and on and on. Although we do feel positive, more positive than we have ever before in terms of the current situation where we're at, because I can tell you, your colleagues over on the other side of the building are actually having conversations about this bill, which is good. Like, you know, in years past, once it would come over to one chamber or the other, conversations would just stop and no one wanted to talk about it. So some positive stuff, and hopefully an opportunity to testify again over to your colleagues in the Senate on oral chemo.
I'm very thankful for our speaker for bringing up so many healthcare issues, because without him, we would never have been able to get this passed out of the House.
Yeah. And
I will always be eternally grateful, because he does care about healthcare.
Yep. No, he does. He does. And we were excited to be thrown into that package. We're like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to get some action in the house. And so, from, you know, a chamber that's really been the roadblock for us, in this battle. So, well, you talked about the two big issues you want to get worked on, but is there anything else? You know, I think that always when people kind of walk out and people, you know, spend their terms in the chambers, they always give their farewell speeches. And they're always like, I'm proud to do this, or, you know, I'm going to miss the time that, you know, we'd always go out to dinner with so-and-so. Like, so what, you know, is there anything else you want to add on to that list? That maybe outside the healthcare realm or something to say, you know what, I did that and I made that change for folks.
I worked in higher education before I came to the state legislature. So college affordability is a huge, huge project of mine. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm figuring it out. I want to create a state loan program with a 1% interest rate so students can actually go to school and afford it. They'd be completely unsubsidized loans, so they don't accrue interest until after they graduate, because an incoming freshman is only eligible for $5,500 a year in federal loans. That is nowhere near the cost of attendance. So we have to work on those things as well. And I was just named the ranking Democrat on the Higher Education Subcommittee of Appropriations, working on that funding. Uh-huh. And my chair, Representative Frederick, and I seem to be on the same page of a lot of things. Nice. So I think we're actually going to get a lot of good work due, bringing back scholarships, bringing back grant programs. I think we're going to do some amazing things. But another thing I want to get accomplished, and it kind of has to do with cancer, so I'm going to bring it back.
Hey, it's all good. Bring it on back.
Michigan and Louisiana are the only two states in the nation that surrogacy is not legal.
Oh, okay.
Whatever your opinion on surrogacy is, I most likely am going to change your mind with this little story. As a young cancer survivor, you know you have to be out of treatment for 10 years before you become eligible to adopt, because adoption for young survivors is pretty much almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And with my cancer and so the kind of treatment I'm on, I won't even be eligible to adopt until I'm 52 years old. And after 50, you're no longer eligible. And because of my cancer being caused by hormones, I can't get pregnant myself. And there are so many of us in this situation. And I don't think it's fair to have two parents who want to bring a child into this world more than anything to not have an option to do that, especially with adoption. I really want to change that. But while we're working on adoption, I'm hoping to bring surrogacy legal in the state of Michigan so everyone has an option.
Yeah. Boy, I just learned something today. I didn't know that.
People don't know surrogacy is not legal in the state.
Yeah, that's crazy. I did not know that. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I'm excited that I now know that. And I think I tend to agree with you on that. I don't know how you feel about that, Ashley, but I tend to agree on that. So
definitely.
Well, hey, we're getting ready to wrap things up. And so, you know, March is St. Patty's Day is this month. And
it's my birthday.
Basketball. It's your birthday today, neighbors. Okay. So then once we let you go and you start watching the Purdue game here, because I know you're a Boiler. Sorry, I just totally outed you. But when you're going to go watch your Boilermakers, what are you going to have in your cup as you're sitting there cheering them on?
Well, I got to bring back the Indiana love. So my favorite beer is from a brewery in Munster, Indiana called Three Floyds.
Nice.
Oh, you know about it.
They're here now.
I know. And Gumball Head is the greatest beer of all time. So I always watch my Boilermakers with a nice Gumball Head.
Okay. All right. I like a good Gumball. I like a little Robert the Bruce every once in a while. That's pretty good. So how about you, Ashley? What's in your glass tonight when you're watching the Spartans?
Oh man, I'm a vodka soda girl. So I just go straight to the hard stuff.
Nice. Good for you.
Yep.
Good for you. You know, see, that's what happens when you get into this advocacy world on the outside. You know, you go to the hard stuff right away.
Gotta relax a little bit.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'm a brewer myself, so I've got an Irish ale, and I've got a I've got a toasted coconut marshmallow porter on right now that I'll be enjoying tonight as I cheer my green and white on to victory, hopefully over Davidson. So,
going for a beer next time.
Hey, anytime. Yeah. Always welcome when you're up here. Just let me know.
Yeah, wait. So,
all right. Well, Representative, thank you so much for taking some time out of your Friday today. And we'll let you get back to watch your Boilermakers. But thanks for joining us. And, you know, we're looking forward to some great things with Oral Chemo coming up.
Thank you guys so much for having me and just for having a show like this, because anytime we can get advocacy out there, we're making such a difference. And I truly believe turning adversity into that advocacy.
Awesome. Thank you. Joining us today was Representative Samantha Steckloff, representative out of Farmington Hills, sharing her story and her journey. Man, you know, it's been a busy episode, and I feel like it's been a really busy March, hasn't it been?
It's the busiest March of my life, I feel like. But, you know, I always love hearing Rep. Steckloff share her story. It's really moving, and, you know, young cancer survivors getting involved in legislation at the top level, like her, is just really inspiring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think all of you know we're coming to you late this month, and it's because March has been a packed month. And so, you know, we appreciate everyone being on. We appreciate Dr. Al-Halak taking some time to with us today. We also appreciate Representative Steckloff taking a few minutes to chat with us about her journey and where she is today and hearing her story. But we've got a lot coming up in April, too, knowing that, you know, as we get into April, we get into spring. Spring means more activity, means spending more time outside, means doing a lot more. So we're going to focus in on nutrition a little bit and talking about healthy eating, healthy living, you know, those type of lifestyles, things you can do with somebody who works in that field at Carmanos during our Carmanos McLaren moment. We're going to have a nutritionist on to chat about that a little bit. But also we're going to take a few to preview our Cancer Action Day, which will be happening after our podcast airs. And so, and then, you know, once we get into May, it'll be a recap in terms of what had happened. But yeah, join us. We got a lot of great stuff coming up in April. So, you know, Ashley, thank you so much for being on. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time. And we'll see you in April.
See you in April.